Hi, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. And today we have another wonderful guest with such an interesting thing to talk about, such an interesting concept. And it is Marnie Makrodakis, who has written the book called Creating Time. And who among us has not said, I don't have time for this anymore, I can't do this, and we are all pressed. So, Marnie, I'm just going to go right to you.
Oh, wonderful. Hello. I'm so glad to
and
be here.
What made you take this on?
I think that I hit a critical point of time hysteria when I had my first child about 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I think that at the time I had a very successful online business. I had a full life.
What is that? And do you still have it?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Artellaland.com is my online company. I've had it for 10 years. It's an online resource for creative entrepreneurs and writers and artists. And so I've been doing that full time for 10 years. And then I just decided, you know, I'll throw a baby on top of this. Uh-huh. And it really made me feel like I was really struggling with time. And what I found interesting, Janet, is that when I approached the traditional time management resources that are out there.
What is that?
Well, time management books, you know,
okay.
Yeah, time management
looking
books,
for some help.
The tools. Yes. Uh-huh. And I think, well, I'm a smart girl. I can figure this out. But the more and more that I fragmented my time to manage it, actually, the less satisfied and connected to my life I felt.
Oh, okay. So there are a couple things in your book, but I wanted to say that I remember growing up, and I'm a lot older than you, so it was a different time, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I remember my mother saying to me, you always have 5 minutes to drop someone a nice note.
Yes.
Well, as an adult now, at this stage of my life, I'm thinking, you know, sometimes I get up in the morning and then it's bedtime, and I haven't had 5 minutes to drop someone a nice note.
Mm.
How do you talk about create time? You have to take something away from something, no?
Well, I think that we've all had experiences of creating 5 minutes to do something or creating 4 hours to do something. Now, unfortunately, that's usually related to crises. Somebody goes to the hospital, you're gonna create that time. We've all said, you know, oh, I can't take any time off work, and then we get very, very sick, and we have to.
Right.
We've all had opportunities where we've seen when we think there's no time, if we've got to get on a flight to go to a funeral, we can do it.
Right.
So why do we have to wait until the crisis is there?
That's just a wonderful question, because I sometimes, and I'm never alone in what I think or feel in this world. You know, I get a cold or I get something that just hobbles me.
Yes.
I don't mean a cold, but I mean something worse. And I think there is no convenient time to get sick.
Exactly. And that is why, I mean, we can look at those as examples to say, yeah, we can make time. It's not about finding time. It's making the time for the things that matter.
So what is the difference between making time and finding time? And I want to start with something else. You'd mentioned earlier that you had some physical issues yourself.
Was this
growing up?
Yeah, I have a genetic bone disorder, a metabolic disorder that's affected me in many, many levels, both bones and organs and immune system. And so this has been definitely part of my life,
okay.
A lot of chronic pain.
Uh-huh.
And I definitely, you know, it's interesting because there is a component of mind over matter, right? Of how imagination can transform our experience in our body.
Well, because if you're physically, if you face a few days where you're physically limited, like you said, even you have to go to a funeral.
Yes.
You manage to find time.
Yeah.
I once heard, and I've tried it a couple of times, that in my endless to-do lists, if you let them sit for a couple of days, you find that half the things you don't really need to do.
Yes.
And that's just a gift of some extra time.
Yeah.
What do you?
Yeah. Well, I think that that's true. I think that the book Creating Time is filled with a lot of tips and techniques along those lines. I mean, what happens when you actually look at your list and are realistic about how much time everything on your list takes.
Mm-hmm.
I was amazed when I did that and found that I was expecting myself to do 30 hours of work in an 8-hour workday.
Absolutely.
Because our perception is warped. I also think creating time.
Can we go back to that? Our perception is warped, because that must be the crux here.
Yeah, I think, well, time is relative. We know this from the theory of relativity from Einstein. We know this from our everyday experience, you know, of, you know, us spending time together versus half an hour in the dentist chair.
And how time goes so fast.
Yes. And so a real driving force behind the book is how we can control that relativity of time. Mm-hmm. How can we use our imaginations and our minds and our bodies to affect whether time feels like it's moving more quickly when we want it to, mm-hmm. and how to slow down time when we need to create more of it. And imagination, I believe, is the gateway that allows us to play with time. I think of time as being Play-Doh, you know, something that we can form and mold.
So you're not threatened by it then when you look at it that way.
Well, I think that's the point.
Yes,
I think that
Janet,
you hit right exactly on the point. Whatever our time complaints are, whether it's we're too busy or we're too bored, these are two opposite ends of the spectrum, right?
Right.
But they're still the same. It comes down to the crux of the idea, which is that we are fighting against time. Time is not working with us.
There's a certain terror. People get terrified.
Yes. Uh-huh. So whether it's that time is lost or time is running out or there isn't enough.
Or you're not doing things at the right time.
Yes.
I remember my father talking about patients who were terrified in the morning because they hadn't slept at night when they were in the hospital. People, when you ask people, I don't know if you've ever found this, I see it a lot, are you hungry, like around noon? And they look at their watch.
Yes.
And if you clap your hand over their watch, they don't know if they're hungry.
Exactly. And we go, again, we will step out of ordinary, linear, quantitative time when we go on vacation. But why wait till vacation? Why not be more in tune with a right-brained, intuitive approach
to time? How do you do that in your normal day when you have too much to do?
Mm-hmm. I think the first thing is, back to what we were saying a moment ago, to realize that time can be our friend. We can have a relationship with time that is a partnership. Time can be our lover, our best friend. It's not something that we're fighting against.
Don't you have that feeling sometimes when you've got a lot to do and somebody calls very apologetically and has to cancel or reschedule? What's your reaction to that?
Oh, when that gift of time comes in?
Exactly. Yes. That's exactly how I see it. I say it's really okay, and I hang up and say, thank you for the gift.
Yes.
I've got another hour now to do something else.
Yes, and I think that in the book I speak about how we can bring more of this spontaneous relationship to time and in our personal relationships, both with our friends at work, with coworkers, so that we can all have an approach to time that is less bound by the chronological rules. I say time is not just hours on our watch, but time is hours.
Oh,
hours.
O-R-S.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Yes.
Yeah, it's really, of course, we do have the quantitative construct that is actually wonderful in itself. The quantitative construct allows us to meet together.
Oh, that's right. It allows us to know that we're supposed to be someplace at the same moment.
Yes, it allows us. And that's one thing. That's another wonderful thing that, you know, where we're always just, so angry at time. Time is wonderful. Time allows us an organizational structure that allows us to do the things that we're here to do in this world.
Well, time as we define it, you know, what our watches say.
Yes.
So if yours says 3 o'clock and mine says 3 o'clock, that's the game. We show up at the same place.
Yeah, but time is also so much more than chronological.
Sure.
And that's why I think the time management books don't necessarily work, because they only meet us on the chronological level.
I
embrace a view of time that is full of nuance, that because time is psychological, it's spiritual, it's emotional, it's spatial.
So that living in the moment must be a big part of how you...
Absolutely.
If you're doing one thing and concentrating on the next, you've lost a lot, right?
You've lost a lot. And that, interestingly, does alter our perception. When our focus is scattered, time feels like it's moving faster. That's why everybody feels like time is moving
so fast.
Okay, so
today. Focus is really important. I can feel the truth of that.
Yes, yes.
And what about... you talk about multitasking.
Yes, and my antidote is multibasking, which is exactly coming to the moment. So instead of multitasking, like we're all expected to do today, come to this moment and bask. What do you see? What do you feel? What do you intuit? What do you smell? What are the colors? Make this moment right here as present and vivid as possible. That expands time. It's amazing how long 10 minutes of doing just one thing can be.
Oh, yes, and how you can really feel the success of it, right?
Because you're fully there and you're not trying to do 5 things in 10 minutes.
So if you try to do 5 things in 10 minutes, you may fail at all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do one thing in 10 minutes that you choose to be of the most important,
then
you succeed at one thing, which
Absolutely.
Is better than failing at 5.
Absolutely. And that's why I found
interesting. And that would make time your enemy.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Exactly. And I think that it's interesting that the more that we are learning to manage our time, you know, fragmented and down and to all these little increments, I do think that time management, traditional time management, can make us more productive, but often at the peril of what we're experiencing.
What is traditional time management?
Well, I think of it as any techniques that have to do with the linear time, you know, breaking it down.
12:15 to this, 12:40.
Multitasking, blending activities, you know. And again, I mean, I think that they can really... all of these productivity aids, you know, you can program all kinds of reminders and alarms in your smartphones and all of which
takes time.
That's true. That's true. And those things do help us be more productive, but I think they take away something because I found that, you know, I was following a lot of time management advice and getting awfully good at multitasking, but I was just a partial person. I was never fully there. And again, it makes you feel less satisfied and less successful.
Right.
Because I felt like, well, I was just kind of doing everything with half of me or a fourth of me, as the case may be.
So you deny yourself that real feeling of success. I think when you look at people who really are successful, and I often see people as whether they use time well.
Mm.
And what does that mean to you?
Well, I think using time well to me means having a relationship with time that is intuitively based and not only based on the linear quantitative.
And those people never seem rushed. When I think about it, they're just kind of easy, like you're talking about.
Yeah. Time is very... I'm not saying that we have to forget about quantitative time completely at all.
You can't, or you wouldn't have any friends left.
Exactly. Right? But I think of it kind of like sleep, where I think most of us would prefer to have, back to sleep, the topic before, I think most of us would prefer to have 6 hours of really deep, restful sleep than 9 hours of tossing and turning in bed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the qualitative measurement that ends up mattering more.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think if we can remember that we're not just running around according to an arbitrary clock, but that our qualitative piece of time, so that we can measure things not only by how long something takes, but how much we learn, how present we are, how connected we are.
But that seems to be the underlying thread to everything you're saying, is to be present and being self-aware.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that the qualitative and quantitative time work together, and that's really important to emphasize, that I'm not saying, let's just throw out the clocks and be in the moment. In the book, I talk about chronos and kairos, the two Greek words for time. One refers to the chronological measured time, and that's chronos. We get our word chronology.
Right.
And kairos refers to spontaneous, circular time that is not measured, time between the times. And I think a very helpful exercise in self-awareness is just to start being aware, am I in chronos or kairos right now?
Mm-hmm.
And what would happen if I switched to the other one? Because it's not that Kairos is spiritual and great and Chronos is bad. Chronos, again, helps us get things happening. Helps us meet. Helps us connect.
So I notice you're not wearing a watch.
No, I don't wear a watch.
A lot of people don't wear watches.
Yeah.
And it's just interesting to me. A lot of people today don't wear watches.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it was interesting. In all the people I surveyed, I had wonderful people who
you noticed that
part
yourself.
Of the book. Yeah, a lot of people are saying that they are stepping away from the watch. It's one or the other. It's somebody who either is totally tied to their watch or not. In the book, I have a lot of projects creating alternative watches. What else could we have?
Oh.
And one of my wonderful, I have over 80 contributors to the book, and she made a synchronicity watch that tracks her synchronicity experiences, a wonderful fabric piece that goes on her wrist.
Interesting, because when I'm during my work day, I wear a watch so that I can be where I say when mine says 10 and the other person says 10.
Yes.
But when I'm out for an evening or out with friends, I don't wear a watch, and I kind of consciously say to myself, I don't care what time it is.
Yeah.
I'm doing this now.
Yes.
This is where I'm going to be.
Yes. Yes. I have, I guess for me purposefully, I mean, I during the workday, again, I'm aware of the time on the computer or on my phone or in the car. But for me, it's very important not to have it on my person, I think.
Burdensome?
Yeah, and I think sometimes it's the subtle shifts that are most important. For example, I don't ask what time it is. I say, what does the clock say?
Oh,
and that's a question, that's something I say in the book, and I invited 50 people to try that, you know.
I grew up hearing that, actually. What does the clock say?
What does the clock say?
Interesting. I haven't thought about that
And it just reminds us that this is what the clock said, but this is not our time.
Oh, it takes away that frantic aspect.
And it means we're in charge.
Yes, exactly.
And my favorite alternative watch is simply to turn the wrist over and take my pulse. Oh. That's true time.
Huh.
When I'm rushing, hurry, stop, either put my hand over my heart or feel my pulse on the other side of my wrist and remind myself, this is the time
that
matters.
Well, that goes fast or slow.
Yeah.
It indicates something.
Yeah,
it?
And this is the time that matters. This is the heart time. This is the true time.
So what about, I know you had something in your book about, I'm not going to say it exactly right because I've closed it now, but the feeling was giving everything enough time to complete it and essentially take it, well, you know, for in medicine today, for example, doctors have 12 minutes per patient or something, and we know that they can't get a good job done in that.
Yes.
So allowing, you talk about making your calendar.
Yes.
And not realizing how much time you need for each person. And then what happens?
Yeah. Well, I think that the beginning
thing,
of the book, I think that, well, the book begins by a really a personal introspective look at time, because time is so personal for each one of us. And that's one thing that I think, again, when we're told how to manage our time, this is not a one-size-fits-all kind of prescription. Our time, we can all say, oh, I'm discontented, I'm frustrated with time. Well, that's going to mean 10 different things for 10 different people. So in the book, I try to really guide through a very introspective process of what do you actually need from time? What is and isn't working? And the process that you're mentioning is part of that intake, kind of an intuitive intake of what is time? What's going on in my life about time?
Mm-hmm.
And as I share in the book, I was expecting, when I looked at my to-do list, I was expecting myself to do, you know, 30 hours of work in an eight-hour work day.
That issue of everyone gets shortchanged.
Yes.
Is so critical.
And I think that's why this came to me so intently when I had a baby, is because then, you know, it's one thing to allow myself to get shortchanged. I was used to it.
Yes.
But when I was really aware that this baby was getting shortchanged.
By you.
Yes, because I was multitasking, because that's what society is telling me to do. That's when it really became clear to me, wait, not only am I not serving this sweet little human, I'm not serving me either. And so it's interesting that I think is what really made this issue come alive, you know, because it wasn't about me anymore.
Yes.
It was about him.
Yes.
And I saw he was not getting
so then
my
you
all.
Touched on something else that proper, not proper, but effective use of time can be really an act of generosity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I talk about tithing time.
Oh, you do?
Actually,
okay.
Yeah, and how just as we can tithe 10% of our income to causes that are important, how tithing our time is a wonderful way to feel like we have more than enough.
And what about that feeling of personal responsibility that I see so often in myself and others, that you've got to see everybody and do everything, or people are going to be disappointed or feel abandoned?
Mm-hmm.
It turns out they don't.
Yeah, I think that
if you don't give everybody every minute.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing, is that we sort of we tend to sort of overestimate the value of our importance
exactly.
in some way. I mean,
yes.
that, you know, that to be perfectly blunt, you know, and think that
it's a kind of a loving arrogance in a way.
It is. And one of my favorite time tools is simply to ask the question whenever we're feeling stressed about time. Just ask the question one word. Really? So, for example, you know, this has to get done in 10 minutes. Does it really have to get done in 10 minutes?
Or at all?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Tell the truth about time.
Oh,
you know, if I don't do this, she's going to hate me. Really? Is that really true?
Yeah.
You know?
No.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm having such a good time talking to you, and it's going so fast that I'm getting a little distressed that we don't have more of it. But I did something that I just never do. I forgot to say the name of your whole book because I wanted to get right to it.
Well, wonderful.
Because time is precious. And so it's Creating Time, Using Creativity to Reinvent the Clock and Reclaim Your Life. And you have a website you'd like to say, please.
Yes, artellaland.com, which is artellaland.com.
Thank you. Spelling is important. So I noticed one other thing that I want to do very quickly, But you have here time and reality, poetic pause, time as a red balloon. Anyway, you talk about the stillness at some point. Mm-hmm. And just because I happen to be about love letters, one of the things I do in my workshops is stress that you have to take time out of your day. No, not while the pasta's boiling and you've got the pressure of having to get up and turn it off. Not while your children need something where it is all yours so that you can think about what you want to say.
Yeah, yeah.
And that poetic pause.
Yeah. The poetic pause, that every chapter begins with a short haiku I call a poetic pause. And the purpose of that was I wanted to make sure anybody who picks up a book called Creating Time, most people are going to be in a hurry. They're going to feel like, I don't have time to read this book. And I
want to say, excuse me, it's so easy to read and it's so beautiful. I wish this were television moment. I'm always wishing that so you could see, oh, Marnie and how beautiful she is. And this book is so colorful and so easy. You just want to go from page to page.
Well, that was my goal. I love that you said that because I wanted to create a book that was easy to flip through, go to a sidebar, find an anecdote, find a story, find an exercise. But the poetic pauses are there to help the reader slow down the pace of reading. When we go to a new chapter, go into a different mode of processing. Get out of just the left brain reading a book and go into the right brain intuitive poetic place. And so that's where the purpose of those haiku.
It's a wonderful book. I'm so glad I have it. I'm so glad I'm getting to take a look at it. So let me ask you right now, if you were to write a love letter right now, which I'm going to ask you to do, and hope that you go home and do it. It's one of the few probably radio moments you go home with homework. Who would that love letter be to?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is actually an exercise from the book, where I invite a kind of love letter conversation between us and time. And I invite the reader to create a time guide, a persona that's a loving muse or angel or guide that is there to support us for time, and to create an ongoing dialogue between ourselves and that force.
Okay, so you're going to write this letter right now.
Let's show how we started. Okay, so
dear,
I'm going to start.
Because you referred earlier to it can be your lover and your friend.
Yes, my particular time guide that I've created for myself, and there's my digital collage in the book, is a time tango muse, because it takes two to tango, it takes two to dance together with time. So I would say, dear time tango muse, thank you for being there for me. Thank you for holding my hand when I get worried that there's not enough. Sometimes I get scared and I run around and I feel like there's not enough of you. And I look for you and I say, where are you? Time, where are you?
And then
in this process, so I would start.
And in this letter, what are you going to say to time that lets you know, lets time know that you're actually partners and that you can catch up with them or...
Yeah, I think that in my process, sometimes it's a two-part letter. Like the first letter is expressing thanks and gratitude for being there and asking my biggest questions on the mind. And then I allow time to write me a love letter
back.
Oh,
wonderful.
So that's sort of the shift. So I might say, you know, I'm worried and I feel stressed and I look for you and you're not there. How can I feel you better? Can you help me? I love you, Marnie.
I like that. And the reply. Mm-hmm.
And then my time muse might back and say, oh, dear Marnie, you sweet darling girl. You are so precious. I love how you run around and sometimes you're running so far that you can't find me. But look, baby girl, I'm here.
Oh, I love this. You know? I'm a big believer in sitting down and writing yourself a letter from Elvis Presley.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Anyone that whose approval and... you like, and I just never thought of it in terms of just from a concept.
Yes, yes. And this is something you can do with anything. You could write, you're worried about a job interview, write a letter to the interview. Dear interview,
definitely.
Let the interview write you back. This is a way that we can look at any challenge on an intuitive level using love letters.
Yes. Oh, which is
your wonderful structure.
Yeah.
And it's a great way to really get our intuitive wisdom.
And by the way, just to digress for a second, you talk about rituals during the day.
Yes.
And I know that writing letters for me is kind of a ritual.
Mm.
And I will make time for that.
Yes.
My husband laughs at me because I've always, you know, in the evening, it's my unwinding and my communicating kind of. But I think that was Johnny Carson's success. It punctuated the day. It let you know that it was time now to relax and go to sleep. There's a very clear message in that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that rituals, and I talk about punctuating.
Yes, you do. That's why I'm
the beginning of the day and the end of the day really set the tone of time.
And it gives you permission to do something or be something.
Yes. And a ritual doesn't have to be elaborate. And, you know, it's wonderful. I had some of the people who were in the book who tried this, and they admitted, you know, they created these really elaborate rituals that they couldn't keep up.
Sure.
And then they felt badly for feeling like they couldn't. A ritual can be as simple as taking 3 deep breaths, as checking your pulse instead of checking your watch, of writing a daily haiku poem, of writing a love letter. I can't think of a more beautiful ritual than that, of closing down the running around of the day and sitting down with a beautiful piece of stationery and writing a letter.
Yes, because the visuals of that are really soothing too.
Yes.
So let me ask you something now about this letter. I feel that a love letter really needs to be stamped and put in the mailbox and sent to somebody. To whom will you send this?
To whom would we? Would
it's only so much fun to figure this part out. I like
it. Yeah, well, this is very interesting because I write letters all the time to concepts, and they're just kept in my journal. But I love the idea.
Oh, well, that's different. That's a different thing. Journaling.
It's a different thing.
Because there's something about getting an envelope in the mail with handwriting on it.
I know. I think the best thing, I agree, maybe it needs to be, if it's the letter from time to me, it needs to be sent to myself.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And then I can get it in the mail 3 days later.
Exactly.
Or, even better, ask a friend, you know, put this in the mail to me sometime serendipitously, anytime in the next 6 months, and then you never know when it's going to come. And
that's a wonderful thing to do. Kim actually had that experience in a group. Wrote letters, and they were to give the letter to the person sitting next to them, and the person sitting next to them was to put this in the mailbox when that person felt that the writer might need that encouragement.
Yeah.
And it always came on exactly the time you needed it.
Yeah.
Which means that you always need it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you send one to yourself.
And I think you're going to be
amazed that the you that wrote it is a different person than the you that's going to read it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I have an online program called Art Appreciation Post where you make artistic little postage stamps and each day expressing a different lens of gratitude. It's a gratitude practice to make a tiny, tiny, tiny little postage-sized piece of art that reflects gratitude every day.
And then you just keep those like in a treasure box
somewhere?
Actually,
you put them on envelopes next to regular postage. Yeah, to the idea
to festoon an envelope.
To share your gratitude in the mail. And
that's, by the way,
out.
That's a very good point because the envelope is the gift wrap.
Yes. Yes.
And it is the first hello.
I agree. I agree. And I love that. And I've always loved mail art and anything that is decorative with an envelope. And so I have this practice of adding an artistic stamp that
wonderful.
Is connected to self-gratitude and an expression of gratitude on the letter.
Oh, may I borrow that idea?
People making their
own stickers to put on.
You may.
For some reason I never thought of that.
I'll actually send you a set so that you can see some of mine.
I'd love to. Thank you for doing this with me. This is just so instructive and so really motivating to take another look at how frantic we get. Mm. You hear people all the time saying, oh, there's just not enough hours in the day. Well, the reality is there are as many as you're going to get.
Yes, yes, exactly.
So whining about it just takes more time away from what you want to do, right?
Oh, that's so true. That's so true. And I think that
I've become aware of a lot just listening to you.
Well, I think that time is an issue that I think gets in the way of a lot of things. Yeah. It's our default, let's blame time for everything. You know, if we're not living the life we want to live, it's awfully easy to blame time. But time is our amazing resource. Mm-hmm. And as you said, it's all we have, and it's ever-present. That's the irony. As much as we feel like it's lacking, it's like oxygen. It's there for us.
Yes. Okay, Creating Time. It is a wonderful book, and I imagine we can get it through your website.
Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, online bookseller.
Okay.
Yeah. So, or any bookstore.
It is so worth your time to take a look at this book.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, dear. Well, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye for now, and please remember that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, that writing a love letter is a special occasion.